Welcome to a new session of the world's 100 greatest people. In this session, we'll introduce you to the most renowned playwright in the world, a playwright many people believe is the greatest writer in the history of English literature, William Shakespeare. Shakespeare's work has been admired and loved for over three centuries. People of every nation, in every age, can appreciate its universal and timeless themes, the relevance and depth of its characters, the beauty of its language, and the genius of its creator. William Shakespeare was both a dramatist and a poet, but it is his plays that are most widely known and which have so profoundly influenced the world's writers and thinkers. He lived only 52 years, a short lifespan by our standards, but a long one for the times. He was a prolific writer. In that short span, he produced 36 plays, 154 sonnets, and two narrative poems. Shakespeare's contribution to Western thought and to the arts is manifold. As a writer, he developed and perfected a dramatic structure that serves as the basis still for many modern stories. He also developed dramatic techniques for revealing the inner psychological workings of his characters. In doing so, he established the format for the modern psychological characters that dominate contemporary theater and screen. He created characters that were vivid, ambiguous, and complex. His language was clever and entertaining, ornate yet concise, and he explored the range of possibilities for both prose and verse. He is considered the master of the dramatic blank verse line, which was also explored by some of his contemporaries. No author before or since has been as quoted nor as emulated. Shakespeare was also the master of action. His plots unfold in ways that are imaginative, surprising, but always logical. He prepares us for every event and every plot twist. Each story has an identifiable turning point and a strong climax, and each conclusion fulfills a promise established in the opening scenes. Despite the clear progression of events toward an inevitable end, Shakespeare's plays are also marked by an element of subtlety and inference that make them enduring sources of interpretation and debate. The motives of his characters, the causes of events, become mirrors in which we can all reflect our own view of life, fate, and the human condition. Almost all of Shakespeare's work contains speculation about the nature of existence and human relationships, speculation that is the very purpose of our being. It is through his large body of works that we must come to know Shakespeare. There is very little information about the man himself, except what can be learned through legal and church records and scattered allusions to him made by contemporaries. Even without detailed information on his life, we can acquaint ourselves intimately with Shakespeare because his work reveals a masterful insight into human thought and behavior, a deep sense of the irony of life, and a recognition of the human destiny to forever wrestle with right and wrong and illusion and truth. Shakespeare was born in Stratford-on-Avon, England, the third of eight children of an upper-middle-class family. He was baptized on April 26, 1564, and most scholars agree he was probably born on April 23rd. This also was the day he died 52 years later in 1616. At the time Shakespeare was born, Stratford was a country town 75 miles northwest of London that was well known for its fairs and as a stopping place for traveling entertainers. These entertainers would produce plays about such heroic characters as Robin Hood and his Merry Men, plays which Shakespeare undoubtedly saw as a child. Shakespeare's father, John, was a glove maker and a leather merchant, a respected citizen who held several local government posts. Little is known about Shakespeare's mother, Mary Arden, except that she was the daughter of a farmer. As a boy, he was educated at a local public school, which drew its teachers from Oxford. Elementary schools in those days were demanding. Students attended 9 hours a day all year with only three short breaks. It's here that Shakespeare probably became familiar with the classics and Latin. Stratford had a river running through it, the Avon, and lots of countryside that offered opportunities for hunting and trapping. He probably spent much of his free time in the fields and woods, as most boys did, and his writings later reflected a love of nature and rural life. When he was 14, his father's fortunes failed, and Shakespeare became a butcher's assistant to aid his family. A neighbor wrote later that when Shakespeare killed a calf, he would do it in high style and make a speech, but this story may say more about the imagination of the neighbor than of William Shakespeare. At 18 or 19, Shakespeare married Anne Hathaway, a farmer's daughter from a neighboring village who was 8 years his senior. Their marriage is the first official record we have of Shakespeare. 6 months later, Anne Hathaway gave birth to a daughter whom they named Susanna. 2 years later, they had twins named Hamnet and Judith. But Hamnet, Shakespeare's only boy, would only live 11 years. William Shakespeare now had 3 children, and he himself was still not even 21 years old. Little is known about Shakespeare in the decade that followed his marriage. The period between the birth of his twins and 1592, when he surfaced in London, is referred to as the Lost Years. Some believe he may have been a schoolmaster. It is said that he was caught poaching a nobleman's deer and was forced to leave Stratford. Whether that is the actual reason or not, he did leave at about the age of 23 and headed for the big city, London. There he earned his living by holding horses at the door of a theater. Eventually, he began to land acting jobs, although his acting was never said to be particularly good. However, it's known that some people were jealous of him in these early years because he not only acted, but he seemed to have an ability to write. In 1592, a fellow author described him as an upstart crow, beautiful with our feathers, that with his tiger's heart wrapped in a player's hide, supposes he is well able to bombast out a blank verse as the best of you, and being an absolute jack of all trades, is in his own conceit that only shakes scene in a country. The phrase about a tiger's heart is a parody of a line from Shakespeare's Henry VI, so we know that at this early date, when Shakespeare was 28 years old, he was already gaining some local fame. When he was 29, he published his first narrative poem, Venus and Adonis. If not for his plays, Shakespeare could well have been famous for his poetry alone. His sonnets particularly contain the same depth of meaning and beauty of language that is so admired in his plays. Shakespeare's first poems were quickly followed by his first comedies, including Love's Labour's Lost, which was later presented before Queen Elizabeth. There is a story that Shakespeare himself took a role in a play that was presented for the Queen, and that she decided she would try to distract him from his part. Purposely, she let her handkerchief flutter to the stage at Shakespeare's feet. He never missed a beat. Instead, ad-libbing to another actor playing the part of a servant, said, "Take up our sister's handkerchief," and then proceeded with his lines. It's been documented that Shakespeare played the ghost in the productions of his own play, Hamlet, and that he also played various kingly roles, but other than that, little is known of his acting. In 1589, when he was 35, he became connected with the Blackfriars Theatre, where his dramas were presented. He was acting and writing, and became associated with a group that included leading actors of the time, such as comedian Will Kemp and tragedian Richard Burbage. They were known as the Chamberlain's Men, and later as the Kingsmen. Shakespeare was a shareholder in the company. By 1592, he was acting exclusively for this company, and had become a part of the consortium that had built the famous Globe Theatre. It seems the Chamberlain's Men were an inventive and playful group, not unlike a fraternity in some ways. One story that particularly illustrates this is a story about Shakespeare and the actor Richard Burbage. Once when Burbage was playing the title role in Richard III, he made an assignation with a lady who lived near the playhouse. She told him, "Announce yourself as Richard III," a suggestion which Shakespeare overheard. He slipped out of the theater before the play was over and hurried to her lodgings, where he announced himself as Richard III and was admitted to her bedroom. Shortly after, a message was brought up that Richard III was at the door. Shakespeare sent a message back to Burbage which read, "William the Conqueror came before Richard III. Shakespeare wrote his plays exclusively for his acting troupe and for the Globe Theatre, at the rate of about 2 a year. The Globe was an outdoor theatre located in the London suburb of Southwark. It was one of the largest in the city area and could hold 3,000 people. It's believed that for the opening of the Globe Theatre, Shakespeare wrote his romantic comedy, As You Like It. We also know that during a performance of Henry VIII, a cannon set the thatched roof of the theater on fire. No one was injured, although one man's pants caught fire and were extinguished by a bottle of beer. The theater was rebuilt with a tile roof, but was torn down years later. In recent years, there have been many excavations and archaeological digs aimed at locating the ruins of the Globe, with hopes of perhaps resurrecting it." By the decade of the 1590s, Shakespeare had become sufficiently well-known as a playwright to be referred to in writings of his contemporaries. He often wrote parts with a particular actor in mind, particularly his favorite actor, Burbage. Burbage was the original performer in many of Shakespeare's greatest roles, including Hamlet, King Lear, Othello, and of course Richard III. In 1599, Shakespeare became part owner of the Globe Theatre. 4 years later, Queen Elizabeth died and was succeeded by King James, who issued a royal license allowing Shakespeare and his fellow actors to change their name from Chamberlain's Men to the King's Men. In return for the favor, the actors entertained the king at court on a regular basis. In 1608, Shakespeare became part owner of his second theater, Blackfriars. The king's men performed at Blackfriars in winter because it was heated, and in summer they performed at the Globe. By now Shakespeare was a true man of the theater, writer, actor, producer, and theater owner. To find the time to produce as many plays and sonnets, he must have been a very fast writer, even working with a quill of goose feathers, which was the standard instrument of the time. It also seems he worked more from inspiration than from labor. His actors took pride in the fact that he never blotted a line, which means he didn't make revisions once he had something on paper. It was said he wrote The Merry Wives of Windsor at the request of the Queen in only a fortnight. Shakespeare also had the advantage of being involved in every phase of the production of his plays. Thus he could readily see what worked and what didn't. In London, Shakespeare rented rooms or lived with friends. He didn't buy a house in London until 1613, only a few years before he left to return to Stratford. Anne Hathaway stayed at home in Stratford and saw Shakespeare on an average of only once a year. He spent his days writing, rehearsing in the mornings, performing in the afternoons and evenings, and touring with his fellow actors. There is no evidence the group ever toured outside of England. There is also no evidence that Shakespeare ever took a vacation, even when the theater was periodically shut down because of occurrences of plague. Some people in the 16th century thought, in fact, that the plague was God's punishment for theater, which at the time was considered by many to be a frivolous, if not sinful, waste of time. When the theater was closed, Shakespeare wrote sonnets, 154 of them. For centuries, historians tried unsuccessfully to identify the Dark Lady, or Mr. W.H., to whom many of these sonnets were dedicated. As the 1600s began, Shakespeare had ceased for a time to write comedy and began instead to craft his great series of tragedies. He returned to comedy again in 1608 and also at that time began to explore the romance genre. By now his theater group was the most popular in England, a favorite of the Queen and also of her successor, King James I. Shakespeare made a modest fortune, not from his writing, but from his acting, and he invested it wisely in real estate. His heart seemed to remain in Stratford, for that is where he channeled most of his money. From all reports, he was a hard-working man who never got into trouble and who had an open, honest, free way about him. He was considered good company, and not surprisingly, was known for his ready and pleasant wit. Shakespeare is unique among the world's great writers because he wrote his plays not for publication, but for performance. He took no interest nor involvement in the printing of his plays. Some were printed from texts reconstructed from memory by an actor or actors. Some were supplied to the printer by the acting company. But Shakespeare himself was attracted only to live theater as the ultimate expression of his art. He seemed indifferent to the possibility of broad acceptance and acclaim. He did aspire, however, to be a gentleman. As soon as he could afford it, he applied for the Shakespeare coat of arms. In those days, a family coat of arms hanging above the door was a status symbol, and allowed the owner to be called Master. In Stratford, Shakespeare bought a mansion called New Place, which had 3 stories, 10 fireplaces, 2 barns, 2 orchards, and gardens surrounded by mulberry trees. After he wrote The Tempest, when he was about 46 years old, he finally retired and joined his wife in Stratford to live the life of a country gentleman. His friends were among the elite of Stratford, lawyers, landowners, and preachers. William Shakespeare died on April 23, 1616, at the age of 52, of unknown causes. In his will, he left a silver bowl to his daughter Judith, his sword to a lawyer friend, his clothes to his sister, and his silverware to his granddaughter. He left his mansion and his favorite bed to his first child, Susanna. Anne Hathaway, his wife, received his next favorite bed. Shakespeare tried in his will to leave all his real estate together so it could pass to a single male heir. However, his only direct descendant died about 50 years later, and his estate was dispersed among strangers. William Shakespeare was buried at the same church at which he was baptized, Holy Trinity Church, Stratford-upon-Avon, Warwickshire. On his tomb is the Shakespeare coat of arms and the words, "Good friend, for Jesus' sake, forbear, to dig the dust enclosed here. Blessed be the man that spares these stones, and cursed be he that moves my bones." It is not known whether Shakespeare penned this verse himself. 7 years later, his colleagues created a memorial to him by publishing Mr. William Shakespeare's Comedies, Histories, and Tragedies, the famous collection of 36 of his early plays known as The First Folio. The First Folio saved for us the most extraordinary work from a time period in which very few other plays were recorded and preserved. There is a dedication to Shakespeare, written by the contemporary writer Ben Jonson, that was added to The First Folio in 1623, 7 years after Shakespeare died. It reads, Triumph, my Britain, thou hast won to show, to whom all scenes of Europe homage owe. He was not of an age, but for all time. During his time, Shakespeare was regarded as a great entertainer and a proficient craftsman. It was not until many years later that he became appreciated as the true genius he was, an appreciation that has only deepened as time passes, and as the themes and characters of which he wrote become even more relevant in spite of the dramatic changes in the external world. Since Shakespeare's death, there has been a controversy about whether he was the actual writer of the plays credited to him. More than 4,000 books have been written on the subject, and more than 58 other candidates have been proposed as the real authors. All of this mystery has more to do with the lack of information and facts about Shakespeare's life than any real evidence that he was not the true author. Many of the doubts about Shakespeare are founded on the simple inability of people to believe that one man alone could have produced so many works of genius. In addition, a certain snobbery developed over Shakespeare's background with elite intellectuals, claiming that only a person of high social standing, and not the small-town middle-class roots of Shakespeare, could have written works of such sophistication and intelligence. Yet no important Shakespearean scholar has ever doubted that Shakespeare did indeed write all the plays and poems for which he is credited. Most convincing are his own contemporaries, who wrote of him, without question, as the author of the plays, and who compiled those plays for publication in loving dedication to him. In both the realms of comedy and tragedy, Shakespeare remains the most versatile and accomplished author in written history. His comedies include Love's Labour's Lost, The Merchant of Venice, A Midsummer Night's Dream, Much Ado About Nothing, As You Like It, and Twelfth Night. His classic tragedies include Julius Caesar, Othello, King Lear, Macbeth, Antony and Cleopatra, and Hamlet. The four plays commonly referred to as his romances are Pericles, Cymbeline, The Winter's Tale, and The Tempest. Plays that do not fit neatly into any category include Troilus and Cressida, All's Well That Ends Well, and Measure for Measure. The chronology of Shakespeare's plays is uncertain. His first 19 plays appeared in individual volumes that are difficult to date and possibly contain inaccuracies due to his own lack of involvement in the projects. What is clear is that even his early works, such as Henry VI and Richard III, reflect the range of his dramatic talents and interests. Historians have been able to divide Shakespeare's work into roughly three periods. The first are history plays and comedies. This period begins with the three parts of Henry VI and ends with Romeo and Juliet. Shakespeare didn't write his plays in chronological order. Instead, he flipped back and forth between different periods of history. Therefore, after he wrote Henry VI, he wrote plays from an earlier period, Richard II, Henry IV, Parts 1 and 2, and Henry V. His work in this early period, although remarkable, lacked the depth of character that his later work showed. They focused instead on events which were loosely tied to the plot. They reflect horror at the idea of civil war, a feeling typical of the age, and they explore the responsibilities of royalty, a relevant topic for a country that was currently under the reign of a queen. Shakespeare wrote the comedy called The Comedy of Errors in this period as well, but it's more farcical and imitative of previous styles than his later works. The plots in most of these early works were artificial, but the dialogue was filled with wordplay, puns, and inventive use of the English language. His talents seem to have matured by the end of the period when he wrote Romeo and Juliet somewhere around 1594. The second period begins about 1595 with Richard II and continues up to Twelfth Night, written about 1599. During this period, he wrote histories and tragedies, which were a successful blend of both character and plot. His plots were more unified rather than a series of loosely connected episodes. In the comedies, he moved from simple farce to the more complex humor of As You Like It. The comedies were mostly about tangled courtship and romantic mishaps. The third and final period begins about 1600 and is the most extraordinary period of all. It's distinguished by his most famous tragedies and problem plays like Hamlet, Macbeth, King Lear, Julius Caesar, Antony and Cleopatra, and Othello. The history plays of this period are where Shakespeare's ability to create strong, complex characters reached perfection. The stories center on the individual struggle for power and the personality flaws that lead to tragedy. In Hamlet, it was indecisiveness. In Othello, it was jealousy. In King Lear, it was impulsiveness and willfulness. And in Macbeth, it was unscrupulous ambition. Through all his main characters in the plays of this period, Shakespeare explored the human psychology and spirit amid complex, perfectly structured plots, and through the use of expressive, beautifully poetic language. There were also a few comedies from this period, including the popular Much Ado About Nothing. By then, he had mastered the universal themes of good versus evil and order versus chaos that have made his work so eternal. During the last 8 years of his life, Shakespeare wrote only 4 plays, Henry VII and the tragicomedies Cymbeline, The Winter's Tale, and The Tempest. The Tempest is often believed to be the last play Shakespeare wrote, and for that reason, a lyrical speech given at the end has often been interpreted as his own farewell to his profession. It reads like this: "Our revels now are ended. These are actors, as I foretold you. We're all spirits, and are melted into air, into thin air. And, like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherit, shall dissolve, and like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind." Shakespeare's skill with language was so extraordinary that many of his own words are now a permanent part of our vocabulary. Hundreds of his phrases, speeches, and expressions have permeated the English language and become part of our everyday conversation, whether we realize it or not. To name just a few, from Hamlet: "Neither a borrower nor a lender be, to thine own self be true. To be or not to be, that is the question. The slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. To sleep, perchance to dream. Shuffle off this mortal coil." From Julius Caesar: "Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears." From Richard III: a horse, my kingdom for a horse." From A Midsummer Night's Dream: "Lord, what fools these mortals be." From A Merchant in Venice: "The quality of mercy is not strained." From Julius Caesar: "Et tu, Brute?" From Othello: "One that loved not wisely, but too well." Many writers that followed Shakespeare found inspiration in his plays, not just for their plots and themes, but for the very titles of their work. You'll recognize the popular titles that were borrowed from the following Shakespearean passages. From Macbeth: "Life is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing." From The Tempest: "O brave new world that has such creatures in it." From Richard III: "Now is the winter of our discontent." Shakespeare also originated several phrases that are now part of ordinary conversation, including fair play, a foregone conclusion, to catch cold, and disgraceful conduct. Scholars think he even invented such common words as assassination, bump, eventful, and lonely. His impact on our current language extends far beyond what most people realize. In his experimentation with grammar and vocabulary, Shakespeare contributed greatly to the development of the English language and helped shape the literature of all English-speaking countries. But besides his remarkable words are his remarkable ideas. They have influenced millions of people to form ideas about heroism, romantic love, duty, morality, and our role in our own fate. His description of historical figures is the image we remember them by, such as Julius Caesar, Cleopatra, and Mark Antony. Shakespeare drew from many sources of inspiration to write his plays, from ancient Roman playwrights, from histories of England, and from the Bible, to name a few. Yet clearly his greatest inspiration was his own ability to observe and interpret the forces that guide humankind, be they psychological, intellectual, or divine. Today, it is the dream of every serious actor to someday star in a Shakespearean play, which is considered the ultimate test of their art. Among the actors who have proved their greatness on the Shakespearean stage, or in film adaptations of his work, are Laurence Olivier, Orson Welles, Richard Burton, John Barrymore, Paul Robeson, James Earl Jones, Kenneth Branagh, Sarah Bernhardt, Vanessa Redgrave, and Claire Bloom. His plays have attracted huge audiences in almost every cultural center in the West. Today there are theaters in England, the United States, and Canada that still produce his works on a yearly basis. Their deep and lasting dramatic value has led to adaptation in almost every medium, into opera, ballet, musical compositions, television programs, and films. No other writer's works have been produced so many times or read so widely in so many countries. There are many reasons why the work of Shakespeare has continued to endure with such unfailing popularity and success. One is simply the unparalleled richness of his language, his cleverness with words, metaphors, and images, and his great gift for poetry. Another is the technical perfection of his plots and the dramatic appeal of his stories. On a deeper level are the complex moral questions he raised, questions that lend themselves to reinterpretation by every succeeding generation. But most importantly was Shakespeare's profound understanding of human nature. He could identify the qualities that are common to all human beings. He expressed the entire range of human emotions and desires. His characters transcend the time and place in which they're set and become remarkably real. They struggle just as ordinary people do in everyday life, sometimes with success, sometimes with failure. He wrote of all types of characters: kings, magicians, pickpockets, drunkards, generals, witches, mercenaries, shepherds, ghosts, philosophers. And each character, at some level, is part of our own personal experience of life. As Shakespeare himself said, "All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts, his acts being seven ages." Throughout the ages, every individual has been forced at some time to struggle with the conflicts and questions represented in Shakespeare's plays. Duty versus pleasure, morality versus ambition, courage versus cowardice, and the conflicts created by emotions, beliefs, and desires that pull us in different directions. They are themes of the human experience, and they will continue to confront and challenge us through the ages ahead.
This is the end of the session.